And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Well, good morning, Lena, and happy Monday.
Happy Monday. A brand new week. Let's get started.
A lot to go through.
All right. It was a busy weekend. Panda bear and knot and medical strikes, in a nutshell, yes. If you will. Okay. Starting with the ongoing strike, it does look like tensions have reached new heights. Our first key word of the day.
Zero tolerance.
So beginning today, the government will begin enforcing penalties on trainee doctors who have not returned to their duties despite being ordered to do so several times. What's the latest, Adam?
Right. Well, the government stated it will strictly apply rules to those who haven't returned by the end of the holiday weekend that just passed, indicating there will be no exceptions or leniency. Now, the initial government deadline, of course, was last Thursday, but the government did give a little bit of leeway for these residents, giving them until after the holiday weekend, which of course ended yesterday. Now, actions threatened by the government include suspending medical licenses for a minimum of 3 months, and there could be revocations of such licenses as well. Now, starting today, the Health Ministry plans to begin collecting evidence at hospitals to identify those who have violated the return to work order. Before proceeding with any actions, the ministry will notify the individuals involved and allow them to express their opinions first. So they will be seeking what they have to say, but the overall stance is they're going to be very hard line. Now, legal actions may be sought as many residents are still unwilling to return to work. Reports suggest there has been little movement towards returning at major hospitals. There's not much difference in terms of the medical vacuum that's occurring there. Now, Prime Minister Han Duck-soo has also warned of possible suspension of medical licenses. He said the government will fulfill the duty entrusted by the Constitution and the law without hesitation. So another hardline rhetoric coming out from the government. The presidential office also vowed to respond with zero tolerance, especially after allegations emerged online that some doctors were actually trying to forcibly mobilize drug salesmen for their rally over the weekend, protesting the government's planned medical school quota hike, whether that was to kind of inflate the numbers of participants at their rally to make their calls. Remains to be seen, but okay. There were some allegations of that. So, yes, tensions will continue on both sides. Mm. Of course, patients are the ones being affected the most, and they're voicing their kind of discontent and unhappiness about the issue. Mm. And so, yeah, we'll probably be seeing some cases where there will be some licenses suspended because of this, whether that will spur residents to return to work eventually remains to be seen. But yeah, from today, we'll probably see such cases happening. Mm.
It seems that in repercussions, four members of the Career Medical Association have been under a flight ban, I believe. Leave it there for now. All this points to, as you've said, heightened tensions and who pays the price. We've already heard of reports of many surgeries being canceled or postponed, including those scheduled for cancer patients. We'll leave it there for now. As we move on to our second key word, the annual military exercise that has been expanded in scale this year, our second keyword of the day.
Freedom Shield.
So the South Korean and U.S. militaries are to begin their regular joint exercises today called the Freedom Shield. Can you tell us the details?
Right, so it will be held for 11 days through March 14th. They will be simulating emergencies on the Korean Peninsula. They plan 48 field training exercises. That's roughly double the number for Freedom Shield in spring of last year. The drills will include bombing, live fire shooting, and intercepting cruise missiles. They say the drills are designed to deal with a nuclear threat from North Korea. The U.S. military may deploy a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier or a strategic bomber to the Korea Peninsula during the drills. Of course, that may spark anger and further provocations from Pyongyang. Observers say the North may launch missiles that are designed to carry nuclear warheads during the time of the drills. Now, this year's Freedom Shield exercise will also include participation by personnel from 12 member states of the UN command. The Neutral Nations Supervisory Commission is also due to observe the drills to ensure they adhere to the terms of the armistice. So Yeah, they'll be increasing in scale this year around, in line with kind of the hardline stance that the Yoon administration is taking against North Korea. We'll have to see how North Korea responds, but it is expected that there will be some major provocations from the regime.
All right, with that, we move on to our third keyword of the day.
Pyongyang photo.
So South Korea's first homemade spy satellite has successfully transmitted images of central Pyongyang, mind you. They say they are good resolution images of the capital city. This completes one of its earliest missions since being launched late last year. Can you tell us more?
Right, so the satellite that transmitted images of the capital of North Korea was launched into orbit on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California on December 2nd, just as a reminder. Now, the resolution of photos sent by the satellite was reported as quote-unquote good, though the images do require heavy editing, apparently. Now, reports suggest central Pyongyang and vessels at port are clearly visible. Now, officials have declined to specify which North Korean military and government facilities were captured in the test transmission, but reports say the location of government complex number one, the compound that houses Kim Jong-un's office, the headquarters of the North's ruling workers' party, and several apartment buildings reserved for senior party and government officials were observed. The satellite is expected to transmit higher resolution images beginning next month. The satellite, which carries special cameras that can see in both daylight and infrared for nighttime, was sent into space last December. Since then, it has been sending back test images from North Korea. The satellite flies over the Korean Peninsula twice a day and can detect objects on the ground as small as 30 centimeters across. Now, by 2025, South Korea plans to have five of these reconnaissance satellites in orbit to better monitor key targets in North Korea. Apparently, there will be about 40 smaller ones by the year 2030 as well to observe the Korean Peninsula, not just for military use, but also weather fluctuations and monitoring as well.
Space, the next big venture, not just limited to military scope, but there you have it. Let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Marriage is down.
I know we continuously come back to a topic, and it's because we don't really have a quick solution, but we consistently get updates reminding us the depleting popularity of marriage in Korea and the demographic crisis. So more data has emerged highlighting Korea's looming demographic crisis. The number of marriages last year fell by 40% compared to the level recorded a decade ago. That does sound the alarm, doesn't it? 40%? So tell us the details.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's certainly alarming figures. According to statistics, Korea, an estimated 693,673 couples tied the knot last year. That's 40%, as you said, less compared to couples who got married in 2013. From a year prior, however, the 2023 figure marks a 1% increase after more people got married following the pandemic. In 2022, at the height of the pandemic, marriages plummeted to a record low of 191,690. Now, the decline in the number of marriages has persisted for 11 years. The significant drop in marriage rates is attributed to changing attitudes towards marriage, with more people questioning its necessity. Now, surveys reveal a decline in those who see marriage as essential and an increase in those who are indifferent to it. Now, economic challenges like the costs associated with weddings and securing a home also play a big role in discouraging marriage. Now, the decline in marriages is directly impacting birth rates, which have been falling for 8 years. With fewer marriages, of course, there are fewer births, exacerbating Korea's low birth rate issue. For those who are already married and have a child, most of them also don't have plans to have another child, of course, with money and potential damage to careers being the reasons why. So, yeah, it doesn't, there aren't really any resolutions or solutions to this issue, but the kind of consensus in these surveys are pretty consistent over the years, being money being the primary problem as well, as well as especially mothers or inspiring mothers to be basically facing the threat of possibly losing their job. So there's fears of that as well. So that's basically not a very encouraging news for marriages to increase. And of course, all these tie together with birth rates and fertility rates and so on. All those figures are also down as well at record lows. Compared to the OECD as well, record lows as well. So, yeah, this we sound like broken records. All the numbers point to a very bearish a trend, but no solution in hand at the moment.
I mean, relative to perhaps other developed countries across the world, I mean, we see perhaps a slowdown of marriage rates or the attractiveness of just marriages, having kids in general. The more educated you are for both couples, it goes, I think hand in hand with people who want to get less married. However, it's just at the rate at which it's happening in South Korea. I mean, we keep breaking our own records each year with fertility rate. We remind our listeners, because that's just a state we're in, how do we turn the ship around? We've been trying for years on end, and we don't have a quick fix. But the numbers are dire, isn't it? 40% of a drop since the year before.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest criticism is, of course, that many governments, not just this one, have basically, been throwing money at the issue, where possibly that isn't the solution and not the fundamental. Well, it is a reason, but throwing money at the issue is not really a fundamental kind of solution. It's more of a kind of cultural and societal issue that, of course, takes years, if not decades, to kind of solve as well. I mean, we see a lot of couples, married couples with children, both parents working as well. So it goes to show that work-life balance, of course, plays a role in this as well for parents, and just simply finding the time to nurture children in this very competitive country and ecosystem, economic system that we have in Korea.
All right, we'll leave it there for now, because we can do this for hours and we don't have a resolution. We've conducted several interviews on it. We didn't have a resolution. We just had an idea where we're headed. That's the latest. The numbers, anyway. Let's move on to our final keyword of the day.
Household debt.
So last year, Korea's household debt decreased more significantly than almost all other countries, coming in second place for the largest reduction. Let's try to examine what exactly happened. Can you tell us the details of the report?
Right. So upon reading on the headline there, if you will, it might seem like good news, but do take it with a grain of salt. After experiencing a rapid increase in household debt due to the pandemic, of course, and a period of very low interest rates, the trend, of course, has reversed. Now, with higher interest rates, a slowdown in real estate transactions, and stricter loan regulations, Korea's household debt is decreasing at one of the fastest rates globally. Of course, because of these high interest rates, people are just not taking out as many loans as they did before. And spending, of course, has subsided as well. However, corporate debt in Korea has continued to rise without any sign of decreasing, ranking as the fifth highest increase in the world by the end of last year. This ongoing increase in corporate debt poses a potential risk for a financial crisis, simply because the numbers and the scales of such debt are very large. Now, according to the latest global debt report by the Institute of International Finance, as of the fourth quarter of last year, Korea had the highest household debt to GDP ratio among 34 countries. And since the outbreak of COVID-19 in 2020, Korea has held the unwelcome title of having the highest household debt ratio in the world for nearly 4 years. Notably, it is the only country among those surveyed where household debt exceeds the GDP. Now, on a brighter note, Korea's household debt ratio did decrease by 4.4 percentage points, from 104.5% to 100.1% over the past year, making it the second largest decrease after the UK. If the economy grows by the Bank of Korea's forecast of 2.1% this year, and the growth rate of household loans from the top five banks is kept within the target range of 1.5% to 2%, the household debt ratio could fall below 100% this year. This would be the first time in about 4 years, but there are many economists who are a bit skeptical of this trend. They're basically saying, don't get your hopes up. There has been pressure from the government on these banks to kind of keep these loans within that target range. We are in a period where everything is just expensive and people are spending less, taking out less loans to spend, of course, because consumption overall has been deteriorating. But of course, economy is it goes in cycles. So when the economy rebounds, of course, there's going to be more spending and more household debt as a result of that. To what extent that expansion will be, of course, remains to be seen. But for the time being anyway, household debt is reduced significantly.
Thank you so much, Adam, for today's news. We'll speak to you again tomorrow.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.